You know, there's been a time or two when I have had to call in the my executive producer, Jill Nadeau, and said, I can't do the show today because I don't have a voice. And if you've, and it hurts sometimes, and if you've ever experienced pain when trying to speak, you certainly don't take your voice for granted, believe me. Today, we'll talk about the treatment for larynx disorders with a couple of guests at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. There's a pretty new department of otolaryngology, head and neck surgery, and we'll talk to two faculty members who are part of that program. Joining us, Dr. Sandra Lin, a professor and chair of the department. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you with us. Susan Thiebaud, Dr. Susan Thiebaud, is an endowed professor and vice chair for research in the Department of Otolaryngology. And Dr. Susan Thiebaud, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
As we talk with our two guests, they're both within the Department of Otolaryngology, head and neck surgery, of course. And as we talk about voice disorders, what's going on there, I hope you'll join in the conversation. Have you had difficulty speaking? Was it the result of illness or maybe an injury? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Dr. Lin, you chair. You're the head person.
Yes.
So you must have a definition for otolaryngology. A few people have trouble pronouncing that anyway.
Yeah. So in lay terms, many people call us ear, nose, and throat, but we're much broader than that, as Dr. Thiebaud can attest to. While we're a clinical department treating all kinds of ear, nose, and throat disorders, one of the things we do as an academic department in the medical school is really train the future generation. So when you just heard the aging and ageism, that we have people to take care of the next generation and myself, we are training physicians, we're training speech language pathologists, we're training the new scientists for the next generation. So that's very important training. And also we're doing really high level research at the University of Wisconsin, especially in our department. So I'm very proud of the group, and it's a privilege, really, to help these people be more successful.
It's great to have this department. Dr. Susan Thiebaud, how many people, do you have to deal with, or maybe how many people maybe in Wisconsin or across the country might suffer from voice issues of one sort or another?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's estimated that about 1 in 13 people at any time have a voice problem, and then about 30% of the population will have a voice problem over the course of their lifetime.
So that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, yes.
And it's important, in terms of the quality of life, mm-hmm. is it not?
It's exceptionally so, and most people don't recognize how important their voice is until they actually lose it or have difficulty using it. We know that people who use their voice for work, such as radio broadcasters, teachers, ministers, lawyers, they are at a much higher risk of having a voice disorder than someone who may not talk as much at work, for example. But it affects every aspect of one's life, definitely.
I'm wondering, what are the most common problems that typically come up?
So more often than not, it's excessive voice use that causes problems with a voice disorder. However, it can range from a neurological problem to cancer to overuse to an injury after surgery. Sometimes we don't know even why someone will have a problem with their voice.
It's amazing. I always watch the basketball games, and afterward, many basketball games, and afterwards the coach will be interviewed, mm-hmm. and it was like, the person can hardly talk anymore, and you wonder what effect something like that can have on your voice over time. It's constant shouting and hollering, Dr. Lynn.
So that's a great example, and one of the things, for example, we see in children, vocal cord nodules. They sound like they have 40-pack year smokers, and they have like a 5-year-old. And that is an example of voice misused in children. They want to be heard. And so that's an example. But also adults can develop things like nodules or polyps from misuse, and other like lifestyle factors can contribute, things like alcohol, smoking.
Vaping.
Stomach vaping. Reflux.
Yeah, vaping is just as serious as smoking with its effect on the voice.
Samantha in Whitehall has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Samantha.
Yes, hi. This is Samantha from Whitehall. I was just wondering, I had an uncle that he passed away quite a few years ago now, 2017, but he had an undiagnosed disability where it was hard for him to talk. He just didn't. The more he started to talk or tried to get something out, the harder it was, and he would stutter. Now, he died at 75 years old, but what would you do with people like that today that they shouldn't do too much, even 40, 50, 60 years ago?
Thanks for sharing that. And I'm sorry to hear about that, your family members' prior struggles. I think one thing is we really have to have a better understanding. There could be many disorders that could cause these types of symptoms. One, like a neurologic one called spasmodic dysphonia. Other things, even things like a stroke and have trouble vocal processing and producing speech. My own father had Parkinson's disease, and before he passed, really hard for him just to get the words out. So there are things that we can do, but at first it starts with a correct diagnosis, and then like Dr. Thibault's a speech-language pathologist as well as a world-renowned researcher, are key in helping make the diagnosis and treatment in conjunction with an ear, nose, and throat physician. So number one, you'd have to figure out what is the exact cause, and there are things that we are able to offer, say, even in the office that, okay, I'm a little older than, and a little gray hair here, but things that we used to do in the operating room, such as Botox injections for spasmodic dysphonia, we do those in the clinic now. You also can do fillers for vocal cords, kind of like fillers in your face. Mm-hmm. That used to be done in the operating room, and now it's amazing that we can do these things without general anesthesia, with just some topical anesthesia in the office, and produce really great results. So we're making progress.
We have some more callers online. Ralph is on the road heading to northern Wisconsin. Ralph, what's on your mind?
Question about one of President Trump's cabinet members, who is RFK Jr. His voice is terrible. I'm just wondering if your panel knows what caused that.
Yes, he has spasmodic dysphonia, which is a neurological voice disorder. It's a type of dystonia that affects specifically the vocal folds and the larynx. There are a number of treatments that improves the quality of the voice. It can never go away per se, but there's multiple treatments like Botox that Dr. Lynn had mentioned. I want to say I feel like Senator Kennedy went to Japan and had a surgery, which they do in Japan. That's different than what we do in the U.S. And as we can hear, it may not have been as successful as we had hoped. But there are many different treatments we can do. And I want to say there was actually a very famous radio broadcaster who had spasmodic dysphonia.
I think someone in NPR. That had been years ago.
What's her name? Diane. Okay, well. He has spasmodic dysphonia.
Ralph, there you go. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Kathy in Madison. Kathy, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I am a voice teacher in Madison and a singer. And my first experience with the The UW was through my teacher at the university, who was associated with Diane Bless. She was a therapist out there, and we got to visit the voice clinic and get scoped. They looked at our vocal cords. It was very exciting. I myself have been a patient there. In 2015, I had a vocal cord hemorrhage, which was very frightening and, you know, was really horrible to look at. And I'm fully recovered from it. I followed the directions and was on vocal rest for a time and couldn't teach, couldn't sing, but that was okay because it all came out okay in the end. So I'm just amazed at the resiliency of the vocal mechanism and the vocal cords in particular. And I'm also just amazed at what is going on at UW. I've sent students to the clinic. I have friends who've had surgery there. And in most cases, everything came out okay. So thank you for your continued work and service to the voice community, which is important.
Thank you, Kathy, for calling. Dr. Lynn?
I just wanted to mention Dr. Diane Bless. She retired, but is still very active, and she received the Wisconsin Medical Alumni Association Award for her contributions. She was really instrumental in setting up not only the vocal clinic with Dr. Chuck Ford, who is a laryngologist, a specialized otolaryngologist, but she really helped set up the research portion as well. So,
yeah, and if I could just add, our voice clinic started back in the 80s under the supervision of Chuck Ford and Diane Bless, and it was the first in the country to have a model where the patient is seen by a team of experts, by a laryngologist as well as a speech pathologist. That model is now used throughout the country, and we initiated that here in Madison.
And we'll talk some more about that with our two guests. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR News. And then we'll be back with Dr. Sandra Lynn and Dr. Susan Thibault. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
It's almost noon, and another hour of the Larry Mueller Show is coming up on WPR News. After Larry, On Point starts today at 1, followed by The World. At 3, All Things Considered brings you the latest from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio.
The nation's special education services are targeted with sweeping layoffs by the Trump administration.
On Wisconsin Today, hear from a special education director on how Wisconsin kids could be affected.
And Green Bay hosts the World Street Fishing Championship. Members of Team USA introduce us to the growing sport.
No boats, no electronics. Nearly everything you can catch with an artificial bait counts.
Coming up tonight at 7, right after Marketplace on WPR News.
This is WPR News.
Talking today about medical treatment for the larynx, also known as your voice box, and some of us make a living by talking, and in addition to radio talk show hosts like me, we've got teachers, pastors, singers. Most of us depend on being able to be heard. So if your job requires you to speak up and you suddenly can't, good to know there are some solutions. Larry Mueller here. With us today, Dr. Sandra Lynn, a professor and chair of the new Department of Otolaryngology in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Also with us today, Susan Thibault, who is an endowed professor and vice chair for research in the Department of Otolaryngology. What questions do you have about how to take care of your voice or when surgery should be considered? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Great to have you with us here on WPR News. We're talking right now about voice disorders and treatment for them with our two guests, Dr. Sandra Lynn, professor and chair of the new Department of Otolaryngology in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And with her, Dr. Susan Thibault, an endowed professor and vice chair for research in the Department of Otolaryngology. Great to have both of them with us, and I hope you'll join in. You can have your voice heard as well. Give us a call. Problems associated with your voice or with perhaps someone you know, I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And let's talk about your new department, Dr. Lynn. You're you're both faculty members in it. Talk about the focus of the department.
Yeah, so we have several. We're going to talk about the clinical subspecialties, meaning we're ear, nose, and throat doctors. We have a comprehensive group, which are more general, and then we have subspecialists. So the one that works with our speech-language pathologists are ear, nose, and throat doctors that had extra training. They're called laryngologists. We have facial plastic surgeons. We have head and neck cancer and reconstructive surgeons, pediatric ear, nose, and throat surgeons, sinus specialized and skull-based surgeons, and brain and ear neurotology. So we have a breadth at Wisconsin. We serve a lot of people in the state and actually beyond the state with the types of things that we're treating, and we also do research in.
You were all here, or most of you were here, but putting it together as a department, why was that important?
Well, otolaryngology, or ear, nose, and throat's been part of University of Wisconsin since the 1930s, but never his own department. And we've been part of the Department of Surgery for a long time. But I think becoming a department is important because just like any group, we have greater self-determination of our goals, our strategy, how we want to use resources to further our mission. And when we talk about mission, it's excellent patient care, pushing forth scientific discovery, and training the next generation. So it's really important for us to do that, especially in this day and age. People might be hearing things about we're affected by things like federal funding and stuff, so that we can really determine and make the decisions as a group.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Dr. Thibault, let's take an example. I understand that that members of your department have helped American Players theater actors.
Yes.
And Madison Opera singers protect their voices. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so with APT for many years, at the beginning of a season in May, we would have the company come as well as their permanent and non-permanent members. We would give them lectures on how to care for their voice, especially in the outdoor environment. We would do baseline laryngoscopy, which is actually looking at their vocal folds and seeing if they have any problems or if they're normal, and recording that. So they actually have that as a baseline as well. In the sense, if, 6 weeks into their performing, if they're having difficulties, we can compare and contrast. Madison Opera, we have a relationship with, for example. Every time an opera is here, the visiting performers, if they are having problems, we see them as well. Hopefully we don't see them because they don't, the opera performers come in for a couple weeks at a time to practice ahead of time and then actually just stay for the performance, and then they move on to their next performance, and hopefully they don't have any issues, but certainly we have seen them if they have had problems, definitely.
Singing about APT, because you're outside and they need to project their voices.
Mm-hmm. They need to project their voices. They do have microphones, but still, it could be humid, it could be raining, it could be cold, it could be hot, it could be dry. All of those environmental conditions affect our voice as we breathe and sing or talk. So we help them with understanding how to best take care of the voice, how to best project, so they're not actually causing damage to their vocal folds, is also very important.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm wondering, what diseases typically cause voice problems? Are there diseases that
So there's human papillomavirus, which causes RRP, or respiratory recurrent papillomatosis of the vocal folds. That is relatively one of the more common voice disorders.
The more serious ones would be cancers of the vocal cord or surrounding areas. Sometimes this is why it's important if you've had persistent hoarseness for more than 6 to 8 weeks and it's not getting better, and you don't think it's just a cold, that to get it checked out. Because if you can catch that cancer early, it's a much easier way to treat it than if you let, like anything else, than if you let it go. But that's probably one of the more serious things that we see is the cancer of the vocal cord or glottic area.
I was also going to suggest or say that so people will have thyroid cancer, and where the thyroid is positioned in the neck, it can affect the nerve that controls the opening and closing of the vocal folds. And so often someone's first sign that they're having difficulty with their thyroid may indeed be a paralysis or a hoarseness. Also, having that removed can cause a damage to the nerve and can cause a paralysis and or paresis of that vocal cord. So thyroid cancer is actually relatively common as well.
Yeah, thyroid surgery, carotid surgery is in that same area, some heart surgeries, and also just surgery, because when they put the breathing tube in, that can cause some temporary problems with voice or some other issues that might need treatment from a specialist.
Yeah, I want to talk some more about the cancer treatments, but we have some questions here. We'll get some folks online. Jean in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jean, what's on your mind?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Paradoxical vocal fold syndrome. I have it, and it's super scary. Can you talk a little bit about it? I've had episodes where I totally cannot breathe. I use pulse breathing, but it is like, please talk about it and tell me if there's some new help for me.
Jean, thank you very much for calling. Well, let's turn to Dr. Thiebel.
Yeah, so paradoxical vocal fold motion, it's also, I mean, has many names. More recently, the appropriate terminology is, the acronym is called ILO, induced laryngeal obstruction. And what it is when you're breathing in, instead of the vocal folds opening, they actually close. Ooh. So then you have a sense of struggling to breathe because you're not able to get that breath in. The most common treatment is voice therapy with a speech language pathologist, exactly what you're describing. It's a type of breathing exercise as well as some relaxation techniques. I'm assuming you've had therapy since you've done pursed breathing. And if you haven't, I would recommend that you go back for some therapy for that. You want to make sure that indeed your vocal folds are observed. To make sure that there's nothing else going on with ILO.
Yeah,
that would be the one other thing I would suggest.
So if you haven't been there, or maybe you've been there but haven't been there for a while, it might be worth it. Well, it sounds like it's worth a trip back to get that looked at again, Jean, and maybe get some more practice with the expert. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Elna in Madison. Hi, Elna.
Hi there. I wondered if you could offer me some insight into why I can't carry a tune. I can hear the notes. I know what it's supposed to sound like. As far as I know, I have no physical disorder, but the sounds that come out don't match the notes.
So singing is like any, is an exercise, right? Or it's something that some people, number one, have the biological mechanism. Their vocal folds are particularly have the right structure. You have the right anatomy of the upper airway, which gives you the resonance and subsequently the quality of your voice. But singing is really an exercise, right? And we have people who are naturally good at running and with training become world-class runners. And we have people who are naturally good singers and then with, you know, coaching and practice are excellent singers. And it's the same thing. So I'm not, you know, there's certainly the adage that some people may be tone deaf, but I suspect if you wanted to sing and get better, I would go and see someone who specializes in singing, like a singing coach or something like that. But the reason why is probably just, you know, you probably haven't done it enough or done it with the right instruction.
Elna, I have the same disorder. And everyone in my family would tell you so.
But there is hope on that. I mean, there are music voice instructors, mm-hmm, who can actually work with anybody, and they're happy to work with anybody, regardless if they can carry a tune or not.
I mean, there's voice teachers. There's Association of Voice Teachers, VATS. I mean, being a voice teacher, singing coach is a profession. There's many people who have studied to do that, and there's other people who haven't. But, you know, even... I mean, Adele, all the famous singers have voice coaches they see. So
even though they're really good to begin with.
Yes, they are.
Well, yeah. Like, you know, the people like Serena Williams, she's got a tennis coach, right? She's the best, you know, and they still need a coach.
Right. And to plug the music school here at UW, we have an amazing music school, and there's many voice professors there as well as vocal coaches there.
There you go. Let's turn to an email from Harold in Waupaca. What would cause a hoarse voice after drinking cold liquids or entering a cold air-conditioned room? So, Harold, apparently, if he drinks a cold beer or something, it affects his voice. It causes his voice to be a little hoarse. Would there be something with freezing up the vocal cords? Or?
So I'll say that the vocal folds are actually, like, temperature-wise precisely measured, and there has been studies that have shown, like, if someone's inhaling heat or cold, does that change the temperature of the vocal folds? And indeed it does not, because they're far enough down into your throat that they don't change temperature with exposure to heat or cold.
Interesting.
It's hard to know exactly what Harold is describing. If indeed is he coughing when he's swallowing, he may be getting, he may not be fully swallowing the liquid, and indeed that's causing a hoarseness because the liquid is sitting on top of the vocal folds and they create that kind of, you know, sound of, you know, liquid being there. And I would suggest he should swallow after he drinks something. If he continues to be concerned, I would highly recommend him going to see a medical professional.
And maybe with the cold air, sometimes it's very dry.
Good point.
And so, you know, I think your vocal cords, like other parts of your body, do best at a certain range of humidity.
Yeah.
So that could be, you know, we live in a colder, drier climate in this part of the country. So some people may experience that in the wintertime. They're a little more forced.
Yeah. Like this studio.
They got
good, dry and cold. Oh, my goodness. Tom and Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for a great show. I think a lot of people don't believe they can sing because some teacher in third grade told them they couldn't. I've been a singer my whole life. And I never took voice lessons until I was over 50, and I've done amazing things with the training I've gotten since. If that one caller is from Madison, I highly recommend Dr. Melanie Kane with Fresca Opera and Haven Vocal Arts. She's made a phenomenal singer out of me, taking me to places I never thought I could go. Gilbert and Sullivan, light opera, all kinds of things.
Wow.
There are people out there. Yeah, there are people that can definitely help you.
Very, very well put, Tom. And so there's another vote for getting someone to give you some voice lessons. All right. We've got a question from I'm not sure who, about the effects of inhalants from smoke. And you did mention that.
Just inhalants in general?
Like smoking and vaping.
Yeah, so smoking and vaping are, I mean, well known to cause, well, smoking is has well, well documented to cause cancer of the vocal folds. And if you're a smoker and you're hoarse, I would highly recommend you see a physician. Vaping is also, you know, you're inhaling a lot of chemicals and the research is too young in the field, but yeah. We do know that indeed in some of the basic science models that it increases mucus, it increases inflammation in that tissue. So it's more than, I mean, I would suggest as well is if you're vaping a lot and you have hoarseness to see a physician to rule out cancer. Those are both, so the effects of those inhalants are actually very
well known
and can be serious.
Yeah.
Some inhalants can also cause ILO, which is a previous caller called about if someone has an allergy or they're affected by different smells or inhalants, the vocal folds could actually rapidly shut and then you can have difficulty breathing. Mm.
Ralph in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Ralph.
Hello. My question may not pertain to voice, but I have trouble getting medications down my windpipe. And there's a lot of coughing, and it's happened four times since the 4th of July, and I'm still coughing, getting things up out of my lungs. Is there something wrong, or what should I do?
I guess I'll start with that. What you're describing is, you know, difficulty swallowing pills, and we call that dysphagia. Mm-hmm. And some people have it with liquids and solids. It's a very common complaint with pills. And there could be many things contributing, so that's why it is important if it is bothersome and persistent that you talk first with your primary care, because they're just like we were talking about voice disorders, there can be many different reasons for it. And and before you can have a cure, you need to figure out the reason. So Susan, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say there's, it's called dysphagia. It could be for many reasons. It could be for sensation. It could be a nerve issue. It could be normal aging, but it would be important to have that looked at. If it's happened four times since July, I would say that's more than normal and would recommend you see a professional.
Yeah, there you go, Ralph. Thank you very much for calling. Susan, could you talk about your research? What's the focus of your research?
So my research in general looks at vocal fold biology and the mucosa of the vocal fold tissue. And I try to understand how that it responds to things like cigarette smoke and inflammation. We are trying to regenerate that tissue in the labs. Maybe if I can branch out a bit, I can talk about the fact that in Madison, we actually have a large consortium of people who study voice. Our research is funded by the National Institutes of Health. We have a large enough consortium of people that we've been able to apply for and get what's called a T32, which is a training grant specifically in the area of voice and voice disorders, and it's the only one in the that's funded by the NIH in the U.S. And that's because we have enough people here who study voice and are funded themselves by the NIH that we can apply for this. So we train the next generation of pre-docs, post-docs, residents in this area, and that's a substantial feat. And if I can expand that just a little bit more to the whole department, our department has been actively doing research for many, many years at UW-Madison. And as we become a new department, departments are often ranked on how much funding they have from the National Institutes of Health. And with us being a new department, we will immediately go within the top 10 programs in this country with the amount of funding we have.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
I certainly believe that would be a nice feather in the cap.
Yeah, well, it's a feather in the cap, and it's recognition of all the hard work that everybody in our department are doing. They're doing, studying things to better, you know, health of people or cure disease in people. And the thing is, it takes a lot of research to move the needle a little bit.
Yeah. Where do you see the research going or larynx treatment going in the future?
Well, I can talk more about maybe clinical things. I mean, things that in general we're using more clinically. We'll be maybe using more AI and diagnosis, having more office-based care, which I talked about, a lot of more office-based treatments that we used to do in the operating room. In some of the other areas, not specifically in voice, there's increasing use of, some type of robotics. I'm branching out more beyond the voice, and we're also in our group studying how to regenerate hearing in a different way. So there's a lot going on, and we are really fortunate that we have group of people kind of at the forefront of a lot of areas. But I don't, Susan, if you want to talk more specifically about voice research, that's going.
So there's, for example, the very first medication for RRP has just been approved by the FDA, and that's available for injections for those patients, and it's an exceptionally debilitating disease. So that's a really important brand new advancement that has just come out. There's certainly a lot of work on transplantation of the larynx or transplantation of different parts of that tissue, That being done in Madison is a huge transplant center, as you've probably interviewed those people. Different medications used for inflammation beyond steroids. And we're looking a lot at the microbiome, for example, and what bacteria is there and how that is involved with inflammatory reactions. So different medications, different surgical approaches, and then different therapy approaches as well.
Well, it has been wonderful talking with you today. We should have you back and do this. I mean, I wanted to talk a little more about cancer and how you deal with that. So maybe we can come back and talk about that.
We have definitely
we've got great cancer colleagues that would come.
This is a big, we have the Carbone Cancer Center. Our head and neck cancer colleagues are doing a huge service to the state. We are very, very busy. Yeah. And we have what's called one of the very few SPOR grants. That means because we're such a great team and a team at doing research, recognized, it's again federally funded to study just head and neck cancer. And that's with our radiation oncologist, our medical oncologist, and our head and neck cancer surgeon. So we're very proud. I think there's only maybe two left in the country.
Two or three.
Mm-hmm. And, we're happy to bring them back, bring some of my other people here.
In the meantime, thank you both very much for being with us today. It's been a real pleasure. Dr. Sandra Lynn, Dr. Susan Thibault, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about your work. It's fascinating stuff, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Well, we're going to turn our attention next to cell therapy. And our next guest knows a lot about it, Dr. Jock Gallipo, practicing hematologist and professor of oncology, our next guest. I'm Larry Mealer.